Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with our Amazing Race exit interview after episode number 7 of Amazing Race 28. And today we are talking with Scott and Blair Fowler, who were the latest team eliminated from the Amazing Race. And we're going to check in with them and talk about Baggate and everything else from this week's episode and this season on the Amazing Race. And Bloaty, what's going on there? So that is our Amazing Race exit interview for today. Of course, we did our Amazing Race recap after this past week's episode. That's up on RobsTheWebsite.com if you haven't checked that out. Before we get into the interview, I just want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are the makers of the Spin for Perfect Skin Brush. Because, look, I'm no beauty blogger, but I do know that the Spin for Perfect Skin Brush is the easy way to keep your skin looking great. That's not part of some extravagant skincare regimen, because the Spin for Perfect Skin Brush is shower-friendly and travel-friendly and extracts all the bacteria from your skin surface and reduces your pore size as well, instantly killing bacteria to make sure that your skin stays clean. It's got four unique attachments: a light cleansing brush, a deeper exfoliating brush, a body attachment, and a pumice stone for all of those rough patches, which are very tough to deal with. That's what the Spin for Perfect Skin brush does. And best of all, it's shower friendly and travel friendly, so you could take it with you anywhere you want, even on a race around the world. Originally, the Spin for Perfect Skin brush was $100. Forget about that. Get rid of that. That's down to $30 with this link and code, vanityplanet.com/RHAP. That's vanityplanet.com/RHAP. Don't forget the promo code RHAP as well. You could also get the Spin for Perfect Skin brush by clicking on the banner on the top of our show page at podcastone.com. I see that we have Scott and Blair on the line. Let's go ahead and patch them in. Scott and Blair, are you there?
Hey, Rob.
Good.
Okay, well, very nice to talk to you both. Sorry to see you go home on the race, but lots of fun watching you both on the show this season. Let's go back to this past week's episode and everything that was going on with the backpack, if you don't mind. So could you just take us through exactly how much time that ended up costing you both to go back and return the bag to Tyler and Corey?
Yeah, so I can answer that a little bit. Obviously, we had three bags with us. Blair had both our bags, and I had picked up Corey's bag, thinking it was Blair's bag. I'm sorry, Tyler's bag, thinking it was Blair's bag. Yes, Tyler's bag. And we made it all the way downstairs, so there was about a 25-yard from the taxi cab to the staircase, and then a staircase that you could see in the edit. You can see the staircase that I had to go up. So that was sort of the length of time that it took to run that bag back and give the bag, say I'm sorry, and then run back down again. So it wasn't a long period of time, but it was 20, 30, maybe a half a minute to a minute, something like that.
Okay, so it was pretty close.
I was going to say it was very quick.
Yeah. And so do you guys feel, though, if it wasn't for the mishap with the bag, that you would have been able to still beat Tyler and Corey to the finish line?
I don't know. I still think that even with the bag, you know, they had a crazy, amazing cab driver. You mm-hmm. thought he, like, drove on the sidewalk.
On the sidewalk, yeah.
Yeah, and there were a lot of little things that I think kind of maybe led to that. You know, we had put our bags in the trunk. Tyler and Corey had it on their lap. Just little things that helped them get out of the cab super quickly and get to that finish line. So I don't think we can pinpoint exactly one thing that we did, and I don't think I would blame it on the bag. I don't know, though.
Yeah, I mean, we were close at the finish. It was very close, so it's hard. You can almost pick anything during the race and probably think that would have made a difference.
Okay, so one of the questions that I fielded a lot when we did the recap of the episode on Friday night, that I was getting tweets during the episode of, why did Scott and Blair decide that Scott should do the dancing roadblock instead of Blair? Now, Scott, you did a tremendous job with it, a million times better than I would have done. I'd still be there if I was attempting to do it. But I think a lot of people expected that Blair was going to do that. Could you guys talk through the decision that you guys made on that decision?
Yeah, so I was in competitive cheerleading for 8 years and have learned multiple dances. And we had talked about it before we went into the race. We said, you know, any dance competition, that's mine, give it to me. I ended up hurting my knee in Chamonix. You see kind of the camera angle where I fell down the side of the mountain some. And I was having a lot of pain on my knee. And so we kind of had a little bit of a debate that wasn't shown, where we're just kind of going back and forth and we're saying, you know, we're going to take this calculated risk because if I do it, there's a chance that I won't actually be able to complete it. And so we thought it would be better for Dad to do it, even if it maybe might take a little longer than me when I'm completely healthy. At that state and moment, I would have ended up taking the penalty. And what's actually interesting is as Tyler and or as Corey and Dad were doing the dance back and forth, Tyler and I were just sitting there watching and kind of picked up on a few of the steps. And we thought it would be fun if we did a little performance in the background. And I got probably 4 steps in before I just had to sit down. And I remember just thinking to myself, if I had done this, I would not have been able to complete it. And so just knowing that Dad was doing it and doing it well, I was so proud.
And how are you doing now?
I'm doing great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would add to that and just say, you know, and they didn't show this as much as probably that they could have. And you obviously have to edit things, but it was physically quite a tasking dance on your knees and your ankles and your toes mainly. And there's a lot of bending and moving of things. So, you know, it was, I think everybody came out of that dance incredibly sore. And there were some movements in the dance where you had to bend your feet certain directions that were harder for some people than others. But, you know, I think the decision, maybe Blair could have finished the dance faster, but I think with her knee, we wouldn't have been in the next leg anyway. So we kind of made the
right
decision.
Yeah, I think that people were just shocked that it was the dad in a father-daughter team that decided to do that. But it makes total sense. And that's kind of what we thought, that there was maybe an injury that we didn't get to see.
It shocked even my mom. She was like, wait, we talked about like what you would pick when the time came down to it. And Blair always got the dancing ones. And we were like, I know, but when you're not in that situation, like I was just, Dad had to do it.
Okay. We have to talk about what's going on with Blody. It was such a storyline on the show this season. Blair, can you speak at all to the status of Blody?
Yeah, so when the race ended, you know, it was the holidays and we hadn't seen our family in a while, so we kind of went our separate ways to see them. And then I think we both just realized that we would be better off as friends. So I have tremendous respect for him, but yeah, we're just friends.
Okay. Scott, in talking about the race with friends, you know, a lot of people have said, boy, that must be so, I don't know, awkward or uncomfortable for you maybe to have this, you know, bloaty business going on while you're there on the race. And I'm sure it's probably in some ways awkward for you too, Blair. What was it like from your perspective having this potential couple forming before your eyes?
Well, you know, Blair's been on her own for a long time. That's one thing you have to realize. I mean, she kind of grew up and took charge of her life, both financially and sort of in terms of what she was doing. She moved out to L.A. when she was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned pretty early, and I have 3 daughters to raise, so I know a little bit about how these things develop. But I learned really early on to trust Blair and her decision-making about what she does and how she does it. And you know, the superficial things of people kind of being together and holding hands and talking to each other, which are obviously part of any kind of early relationship, just aren't very scary to me. So I was more concerned really just about how it might complicate the race more than what the relationship was about or those type of things. And you know, everybody was keeping their head in the race. I think people were doing the things that they needed to do. So, It wasn't awkward, and Blair and I have a really open and honest relationship, and I really do think she's incredibly smart about the way she runs her life. So it was fine. I you know, it was just part of what happened during the race, which is always interesting.
Boy, that Scott's the best.
I know, right? I'm over here like I'm about to cry.
No.
I know. I'm trying to think about if my father-in-law was when I first met my wife, what that would have been like. And I feel like that would have been much more complicated. So,
yeah, you know, I think if I think if Dad had made it awkward at all, or if there was going to be any sort of awkward moments, it just wouldn't have happened. But I think also you're around these people so much, and you have to remember, we don't have any technology. We don't have any way to talk to friends or anything like that. So just having someone there that you can talk to just about life and stuff. Obviously, I had my dad and he had Kurt and stuff, but just to be able to talk to each other, it was a good way to kind of get away from the race.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the other relationship that developed, which was the skirt relationship.
That
relationship. But I got to spend a lot of time with Kurt, who, by the way, is just a gem of a fellow.
Salsa nice dancer guy. Too.
Exactly. Yeah. And boy, couldn't I have used a little bit of input from there, but they were already gone by the time I needed instruction. By the way, the dancers in that ballet that were instructing us were just spectacular. I mean, they were just incredible dancers. So,
well, going back to last week's episode, episode 6, you know, I thought it was very interesting during the oil change task where, Scott, you came in and you were the hero for Sherry, who she was stuck forever. And then you told her, no, you have to turn the thing the other way. And she finally got through the task. And I know that that a big part of it was because you're such a nice guy and wanted to help her out. But was there any part of it that was like, boy, if I help Sherry, then they could get to the finish line before Tyler and Corey, who are such tough competitors, and it might make the race easier for us to win? Did that go through your thinking and your thought process at all?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the question was, you know, what happens if Sherry's just sitting there? Now, there are two places to change your car, and I'm in front of Tyler. But once I get my oil, and I have to change my oil as quick as I can. I can't go back and then help Sherry and then let my car sit up there while I'm changing my oil. But although that was part of the thought process that was occurring. But I didn't know if I could help Sherry, because I'd actually looked at it one time, and I didn't know for sure that applying the tool correctly would cause the thing to come undone. I didn't know she was pulling it the wrong direction in the beginning, obviously. So I didn't actually know exactly what was wrong with Sherry's car when I had my car on the stand. So my goal was to get off the stand as quickly as I could. Tyler agreed that if I got off the stand as quickly as I could and let him get his cab on the stand, that I could go back and help Sherry, which was the thought. So I went back, and you know, my hope was that one of them wouldn't necessarily be there. And I'll tell you, they're both great competitors. I don't know if you could say, even though Tyler and Corey won some of the original things, I'll just be honest with you, Sherry and Cole, they would have been just as much competition.
Mm-hmm. So then going back to the earlier first couple of legs, and actually the first leg in the race, you guys came in last place and it looked like you guys were going to be eliminated, but it turned out to be a non-elimination leg. And then from there, you guys were able to sort of change things around. So first off, how scary was it to think you were eliminated first? And then what adjustments did you make following that?
I mean, I don't think I can even verbalize how I felt when I knew that we were coming in last, and Dad and I had agreed in the cab. I was like, you know, we've had a great time already just being together and traveling here, and doing this so far has been awesome. And so I decided, I was like, I'm not going to cry. And I was really good until Phil said it was a non-elimination, which he actually held on to that a little bit longer than they make it seem in the episode. So we had some moments of knees wobbling. But then he says, you know, it's a non-elimination. And from that moment on, I felt like we were just lucky to be there, and any opportunity that we had in other legs, we just really had to enjoy it, because it was all bonus for us.
Yeah. And then what did you guys do to sort of correct the ship after that first leg?
So, yeah, let me throw this in, because I think I was the part of the ship that was all whacked out in that first leg. You know, the first leg taught me a couple things about my approach to problem solving that was going to have to change. And this is maybe just immaturity and understanding the real details of the race, which, you know, unless you just are completely focused on the race all the time or you've done it, I think it's hard to know some of these things. But there is a gamer sort of approach to things that I needed to incorporate into my thinking, just the idea that, you know, when they say, and it happened in Charmin with the loaf of bread, you know, take lunch to the people on the mountain. Well, and you got a loaf of bread. Well, to a game mentality tells you it's the loaf of bread. You take that for lunch. But the non-game mentality tells you we lunch is not a loaf of bread. So that was happening in the first leg. I read the clue very carefully. It said you got 13 pieces. I got 13 pieces. It said go to the drums. I thought they might be outside. I made a critical mistake of dropping my pieces, but that really wasn't the mistake. The mistake, and what I learned from it, was I should have stayed in the cave and watched other people. I don't know if you've ever played the game of scramble in golf where you have four players and you take the best shot of each of the players. Well, with four players taking the best shot, you can beat Tiger Woods. And if you're in a group and you can watch other people and learn from their both their mistakes and their and what they get right. You know, when we were in Armenia in the church, there were other people getting clues, and if we've been aware enough of our situation and been able to see, now people are pretty clever, they learn these things, but you know, that's how you would have figured that out very quickly, because you would have learned from the first person that figured it out very quickly rather than having to wait for the last. So that did change. Blair and I talked about it. Blair may have some other things to add, but there was a significant shift in my thinking between leg one and the rest of the leg.
Okay, well, I know you guys have to run, but thank you so much for coming on with me. And, you know, Blair, all the best of luck and continued success with everything that you're doing. And Scott, it was very nice to see you on the show this season and learn a little bit about you as well.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy your podcast.
All the best.
All right.
Bye. All right, everybody. There you have it. Scott and Blair here on the Exit Interview. Well, I'm such a big Scott fan. He really seems like such a solid guy. And very nice to talk to both him and Blair here on the Exit Interview podcast. Okay, that's going to do it for us here today on the Exit Interview. This Friday night that I'm going to be traveling to New York for the Live Know-It-Alls show, I am going to be the best man in my sister-in-law's wedding this Friday, and I'm not going to be able to be on the Amazing Race podcast, but you're going to be in good hands because Jessica Lease is going to be with you with Mike Bloom and Dan Heaton live at 9:15 p.m. Eastern after episode number 8 of the Amazing Race. And then I will reconvene with you guys, do the exit interview if there is one, if it is an elimination leg, and then I'll be back with you guys 1 week from Friday night for the Amazing Race live. So looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments on robiswebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Bye.